The VGRT Gaming Podcast, episode 607, recorded on April 19th, 2021.
Welcome to the 607th edition of the TD Gaming Podcast and 440th episode of Video Game Roundtable. I'm TJ Denzer.
I'm Scott Dirk.
And I am Jonah Falcon.
The VGRT Gaming Podcast focuses on game news from around the industry.
Yeah, there's a lot of things going on right now, which we'll be discussing later. I think I'll talk about first what I've been playing. And we had an aborted podcast, and the reason why I didn't post it was it wasn't very good. The news wasn't very interesting. It was very boring. And the last thing I want to do is make people want to sleep even more listening to the podcast. So, one thing I forgot to mention is that I was playing Evil Genius 2.
What do you think so far?
I like it. It's not the be-all, end-all, and I've actually had to put it aside because I'm working on other stuff. It's different than Dungeon Keeper in that maintaining the lair is easier than it is in Dungeon Keeper. The problem is having to balance all of the stuff going on at once outside your lair. The only thing I had to worry about in the lair was just making sure there was enough power for everything. And once you get the stairs and you can start doing things, in different floors, it becomes much, much, much easier. I like it. It has a lot of personality. I've only done the Despicable Me character, Gru, first, who's supposed to be sort of like the classic James Bond villain, like Blofeld, but he reminded me more of Gru. I'm going to start over again, now knowing exactly what I'm supposed to be doing with that with that ex-spy who's a lady. And the funny thing is they all have their own individual personalities, which is fun. So yeah, it's really well done. I like it better than Two Point Hospital. And Two Point Hospital is good. And I've discovered something about myself now. My second life is playing Elite Dangerous VR. There is something about playing Elite Dangerous in VR than just playing Elite Dangerous. Because playing just Elite Dangerous, you know, you put on a podcast, you just play as your ship goes to different things. When you're playing in VR, it's like I look around, and it's like the glorious spaces in 3D all around me. It's like when you see the giant planet just drifting by you, you just turn your head to look. It is a much different experience. And I figured out that I just want to be an explorer and keep on going as far towards Sagittarius A, the black hole in the center of our galaxy, as I possibly can. That's not going to happen because the galaxy is real-sized galaxy, folks. And even if you're zipping along at 100 times light speed, it's still going to take a very long time to get deep in there. I also discovered, you know, playing solo is not different than playing live, because there are so few people. You actually have to go out and find trouble. I see the spots where there's high, you know, combat, and it's like, yeah, I'm going to stay away from that. Although when you're playing solo or playing online, you still have player-owned space stations. And it's always fun passing by. You can't do anything about them. They're just control points, really. But it's fun. Do you play Elite Dangerous, TJ?
I haven't claimed from the time that they made it free on Epic Game Store, but I've never taken the time to take a deep dive into it.
Oh, they made the first expansion free, too.
Yes. I think I'm gonna jump in, like, headlong and just probably go full throttle once Odyssey rolls out, which is gonna be the expansion where you can get out of ships and walk on the surface of planets.
Yeah, I already landed on my first space station that's on a planet, though. You have to enter in at a right angle, you know, you can't be too shallow or too steep, you know, and when you dock, you actually go and you can see the rock. Because it's underground when you go into the base. It's like I said, Elite Dangerous is okay without VR. The only reason I play is with VR. That's the only reason to play. And
yeah, unfortunately, it looks like the new expansion isn't going to have VR support right away, which is kind of a bummer.
Well, here's the other thing. There's a new VR headset coming out from Vive, which is under $600. And if I don't get a Series X soon, I'm seriously going to consider getting it.
They're also they're also probably going to show something off in May.
Yeah.
They have a brand new product that they've been teasing for a little bit.
No, that's what I'm talking about. The $600, or are you talking about something different?
Well, I don't know. There's one that they haven't unveiled yet that they've been keeping, like, they've kept teasing it, but they haven't shown it yet. Mm. And a lot of people are thinking that it's going to be something like an answer to Oculus Quest 2.
Well, you know, here's the advantage of having an Oculus Quest. You don't need a PC. And you can just play it alone. I mean, I always play with a PC League for the most part because the best games are... Okay, I'm lying there because Elite Dangerous is available on Oculus Quest, but I'm not going to buy it on Oculus Quest because I already own it on Epic and I already own it on Xbox. I don't need any more copies.
I know that feeling.
The reason why I'd want to get the headset Vive that requires a PC is that I want to have the high definition. You know, I want to have because the sacrifice that the Oculus Quest 2 does, of course, is that it's at a lower resolution. It's not a bad resolution. It's just a lower resolution, and you can tell. And if I play, say, Half-Life Alyx, you know, I'm not going to get the full experience from it.
Right.
But for what it's worth, you know, I mean, playing Elite Dangerous VR on the Oculus Quest 2 is fun. And like I said, for the first time, I actually warped out to a blue supergiant. And my God, when you warp out right to a blue supergiant in VR for the first time, your heart will go in your head. It's like, oh my God. And I found out the reason why you always warp out right near the sun. Because I got something called a fuel scoop. And what you can do is you can go just above the surface of that star and get fuel for free. Just recharge it using that.
I think that must be really fun to be VR and flying through space, because then it's just you're really all around in space, be completely immersive in that kind of feeling.
Yeah, well, it's even more immersive when you look around. You can see the back of your ship. You can look at the manual off to one side. You know, you look down, you see your body. And the other thing I've been playing is MLB The Show 21, because I got the Jackie Robinson twofer, which gives you the Xbox One and the Xbox Series X versions. And I'm having a blast with it. I don't like the way they do wildness with a pitcher. But otherwise, it's really good. And that's not exactly news to a lot of people who've been playing MLB The Show. I still have played MLB 2K13, and it sucks. I don't like the way it plays at all. MLB The Show has its own quirks, but at least there's so many things that can happen. I just posted a video of where my pitcher gave up a deep fly, it hit the top of the fence, and bounced out for a home run. There are so many things that happen in it that are totally unscripted. People tell me sometimes the ball will hit the base and carom to the second baseman. And I actually had a pickoff that went wild, but it only bounced off the first baseman. The runners tried to go to second, and the first baseman threw him out. There's so many things. You know, it's emergent gameplay, and I'm having a lot of fun so far. I'm only doing Road to the Show, though. I'm not doing League, because unfortunately I'm playing the Xbox One version, which does not include the stadium editor, and I believe it does not allow you to make your own League. So, I'm going to wait until I get a Series X before I do League, whenever that is. Although, GameStop says it's doing, dropping the Xbox Series X on the 21st, All Access. And here's the thing about All Access. It's a little better because the bots don't like to do the All Access. So I just have to be ready. Here's the thing. I have to find out how you register with that friggin' bank. Because what happens is you have to get credit from a bank, and you have to qualify with that bank. And then you pay $35 a month, which includes Game Pass Ultimate. So there's that, which justifies the fact that after 2 years you'll have spent $840 on an Xbox Series X. But it's really how much is a year of Game Pass Ultimate? It's $15 a month times 12. Yeah, it's worth it. So yeah, so I'm going to see if I can't snag that. I have a friend. My cousin has Costco. And that's another way you can foil the bots, because bots don't like having a subscription to Costco.
Yeah.
What were you going to say, Scott?
I was going to say, you haven't tried Octopath Traveler yet, have you?
No. And I may put that off because my Gamefly game kit just came in, and it's Immortals Phoenix Rising. And I'm going to try that out. There's only two games I'll be able to play at once on my Xbox. MLB The Show and Immortals Phoenix Rising. I'm in the mood for an Ubisoft-style big map. do the quest thing.
That, a lot of folks say that Immortals Phoenix Rising is a very slept-on game, and like it's very good. It's very good quality for what it is.
Oh, it looks cute. I like the way it looks from the gameplay videos. It has easy puzzles. It's something I'm going to be interested in doing quite a bit of. I also got a game called realized I had the Unfinished Swan, which I really should play, because for those who don't know, the Unfinished Swan is actually the game that comes before the Edith Finch game. What became of Edith Finch? It explains what happened to her cousin who simply vanished, right? The Unfinished Swan is what happened to him. Have you played The Unfinished Swan, TJ?
I have not.
You should. It's in the Epic Games press account. And The Unfinished Swan, if you really enjoyed what remains of Edith Finch, you really should play The Unfinished Swan. Because it's directly related.
Okay.
By the same people, too. Obviously. So, there's other stuff that I've played, but for now, that's all I'm going to talk about. TJ, what have you been playing?
I've been playing a lot of Outriders.
Oh, yes, and that's the other thing. I've been playing Outriders 2. I haven't played in a few days because I've been busy with other stuff. But yeah, let's talk about Outriders. Go ahead, TJ.
So, yeah, like, it's a very buggy game, but for what it's worth, I think that a lot of the experience when it's working kind of overrides that bugginess. There are a few things that just really get on people's nerves. And I mean, there was an inventory wipe bug that was going on that they're focused on.
That's harsh.
Yeah, that's one that I've been fortunate not to run into, but I did have a close friend that ran into that one. And it's like, it strips you down to your underwear and you don't even have your primary or secondary weapons.
Welcome to World of Warcraft.
Yeah.
Actually, no, Diablo 2, more like.
Fortunately, they're rolling out a update that should restore lost inventories to people.
Okay.
So,
here's the thing. That's not too difficult, because when someone hijacked my World of Warcraft account and used my character, the first thing they did was they stripped them naked and had nothing, and then they restored it to the last point that I had played. So it should be no problem getting back your old stuff, because it's on the server.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I've been playing around on a few different characters. I have a Technomancer that I play with co-op, and then I have a Trickster and a Devastator who are time based, like slow based abilities, and a lot of blinking abilities.
Blink.
And then the other is rock-based and protection-based abilities. Mm. And basically, I built one for absolute pure offense and one for absolute pure defense.
And now, here's the thing. Are you playing with other people?
I play those two characters in solo runs, and I play a Technomancer in co-op runs with my buddies. I like the way that, like, you can... The tech tree in that game is so big, and you can really sort of, like, make your character the way that you want to make them for your style, whether you're playing co-op or solo. I got to a point with my Technomancer the other day where, like, or my Trickster the other day, where, like, they have an ability where they can throw a blade that slows enemies and makes the first shot against them do extra damage. And I paired that up with a ability that lets me warp behind them and then inflict weakness on them to do more damage. And then I had an ability that, like, powers up my bullets. And I paired that up with a shotgun. And, you know, normally my shots in that game are doing around probably 200 to 500 damage. When I put all that together and hit somebody in the back with a shotgun round, it does like 18,000 damage. And it's just like they explode. And it's so intensely satisfying to find the composition and find the working components.
What do you mean combination?
Those moments in the game. I think the mod system in that game is maybe one of the best to ever be in a looter shooter.
Here's a question for you. Have you played Narita Boy?
I have not.
Okay. That's the one thing I also did play. I played a little bit of, and it's a retro-style platformer hack and slasher, but it's done really well. And it's done which you can have the flicker of a monitor as if you're playing the game on a TV set.
Old CRT, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, I've heard good things and I've heard bad things, like, based on the aesthetic that they were going for, that there are, from our review, like, the retro aesthetic is very cool, but it also comes with some slight annoyances of that retro aesthetic.
But here's the thing, it actually ties into the story.
Mm-hmm.
Because the game is about this kid who plays a lot of video games on his, you know, 1980s console. And basically, it's a trance where he's sucked in. But the thing is that everything revolves around the fact that it's a video game. You have to do things like turn off this RAM switch and all this stuff. So you're basically inside a video game. And that's why it looks like that. It's not there because retro is cool. It's more like it's tying into the theme of retro video games themselves. And he's looking for his father, who's a neckbeard. So yeah.
Yeah, and like when I haven't been playing Outriders this last week, I've been playing this new one that came out called Cozy Grove.
Ah, okay.
So this is like the best way to describe it is that it's like Animal Crossing, but with scouts and wilderness and bear ghosts.
Yeah.
The whole premise of it is that you're part of this group called the Spirit Scouts, and you arrive on this island that has what is called a soul flame on it.
Was this originally on Apple Arcade?
Maybe? I don't know.
It's on Apple Arcade. I'm trying to remember if it was originally Apple Arcade, because another game is actually coming off Apple Arcade that people are excited about.
Yeah, but like...
Fantasian?
Hmm?
Fantasian isn't off Apple Arcade. It just arrived on Apple Arcade, okay. But I hear that one is very good. I want to play that one so bad. But... Cozy Grove, I could see it being a mobile game because it's built in a very, like, it's built in a very bite-sized comeback, like, play a bit now and then come back later type way, where you play as the Spirit Scout and you interact with the ghosts of this island and you're supposed to help them, like, sort of find their peace. And by doing, but like you can only find the ghosts by feeding the spirit flame logs from helping the ghosts, and you can only obtain, and you can only do so many quests for any given ghost in a day. Like, they'll give you one quest a day, and then you can do the quest. You can do some resource farming.
The animals look like they're from Studio Ghibli. They, you know, not the human characters, but the animals.
Yes, they are very. I like the design of the bear ghosts. They're very funny looking, and there's just like this giant weird fox character that's like a salesman.
Oh, I know. I see this giant fox building. Mm-hmm. This giant obelisk.
It's called Cozy Grove.
It's called Cozy Grove. By the way, TJ, the reason why I mentioned if it came from Apple Arcade, because the game that just came off Apple Arcade is Skate City, and I was wondering if you were interested in that, because it's coming to console.
pardon. I've seen it. I'm not looking to play it anytime soon. But this one, like, it's super relaxing. They're definitely going for that Animal Crossing vibe that you.
They're going for that. Like, that no, it's Don't Starve with a lot of bright colors.
No, it's like
it's way bright. It looks no. I'm just saying, but it looks like a very very colorful Don't Starve. It has the same sort of pencil-y artwork.
I agree with that, but it's like a vastly different mood from Don't Starve.
Yeah, because Don't Starve is trying to kill you. Every single step of the way, and from the screenshots.
No, this one is trying to kiss you every step of the way.
it's very, very relaxing. Like there is almost no trouble.
But that's my point, though. It's like Don't Starve makes you want to be worried. This game has the same kind of artwork, except it's all colorful and bright and cheery.
The vibe. It makes all the difference of why those two games are not that similar. I mean, the artwork isn't that similar.
Yeah, but it's not a survive or die thing, you know. I mean,
no,
it's
right.
But it is
the things that you have to think about in Cozy Grove is like, eventually you'll start getting these spirit birds that will provide a certain material for you. You'll also find flowers, certain flower plants that you can plant in your camp, and fruit trees. And the reason why those things in particular are interesting is because they all have certain interactions with the decorations that you put around them. Like you might have a ghost bird that hates being around other ghost birds, so you don't want to put it close to them, but it likes things like rustic furniture, like wooden furniture or lamps, so you want to put it in an area where it's away from other birds but close to, like, camping furniture and lamps.
Why does the main character remind me of Stella from Spiritfarer?
Because that's basically... You're doing something very similar to what you do in Spiritfarer as far as the main narrative goes. But the fruit trees and the potted flowers, like, go the same way. Like, they like being near other trees. They like being near other fruits. Yeah. And the reason why that matters is that the happier these things are, the more resources that they'll output, and the more that you can do with what you have. So it's an interesting like bit of personal taste and decoration, and also functionality from figuring out how to make these like puzzle pieces fit together in a sensible way that you get the most out of them.
You know, the developers, Spry Fox, their first game was sort of like a Zelda-ish game called Triple Town.
Yeah, like, they nailed down a good, relaxing aesthetic with this game. And I kind of, you know, it's like, on one hand, it's kind of a bummer that I, like, can play about a good... I would say you can play about 30 to 40 minutes of this game at a time. And then it kind of puts you in a position where you're like, probably just come back later. You have to come back the next day.
Here's the thing. I like games that tell you, okay, stop playing. Come back, you know, do something else.
Yeah. It is definitely that. So for somebody that wants to just play a game for a long period of time, like hours on end, it's kind of going to be disappointing in that way. But as far as like a game that like is just a very good daily short burst game, I think it's super relaxing and really fun.
Unlike Animal Crossing. Which basically demands your time and hits you over the head if you don't give it to it.
I wouldn't say that.
New Horizons is more chill than the previous entries, I think.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, with Harvest Moon and Spirits of Spring. Oh, what the hell is the original name of that stupid game? Story of Seasons, yeah. With the new Story of Seasons and the new Harvest Moon both really sucking badly. It's a good time for this game to come out.
Did Story of Seasons suck?
Yeah.
People were talking about
it's getting some really bad reviews.
Oh, that's a bummer. I know people had a lot of high hopes for that one.
Because it wasn't Harvest Moon. It was the original Harvest Moon. But yeah, no, it doesn't make any sense, because here's the thing. The new game basically went with the hot new mechanic of having your character wander around the world, which sort of defeats the idea of a farming simulation, really. Just that one mechanic has irritated people a lot. Because when you want to do a farming sim, you want to stay home, you know? Mm-hmm. And here's the thing. Harvest Moon and Story of Seasons, you better up your game, because there's a little game out there called Stardew Valley, which is eating your lunch. And Eric Barone just is working on new expansions. Free DLC for Stardew Valley.
Mm-hmm.
And why play Harvest Moon or Story of Seasons when Stardew Valley is getting a lot of love from the creator? Free love.
Yeah. Well, that's a bummer for Story of Seasons, but like Cozy Grove, pretty good game, enjoyable so far. I'm interested to see where like the narrative goes with all these ghost bears. Also, I love that I love bears in general, so it's right up my alley.
There's a board game called Bear Park. You should try it out. In which you have to make a park for bears.
Hanging out on an island with just like a bunch of helpful, happy ghost bears is entirely my jam.
Do they look like ghost bears? I only see these characters which look like droplets from Dragon Hunter.
They all start out as like spirits, and then
So that's what I see. I see the spirits.
They started as spirits, and then by helping them, they like gain a physical form for a while.
Ah, just like Spiritfarer.
Mm-hmm.
Francesca Duclaw.
Yeah, they have some great names, too.
Scott, what have you been playing?
I've finished Fallen Order, Star Wars Fallen Order.
Ah, you finished it. I never finished it.
Completed it. I haven't completed a game in a long time. So
wait, when you say complete, you don't mean 100% completion.
I guess I didn't get all the achievements, but I beat the boss, so the story's
over. No, I mean
all
the side quests is what I'm talking about.
I'm sorry?
Did you do all the side quests?
There really weren't side quests.
They're not missions. They're just side quests to get stuff that improves your character. You know?
Fallen Order didn't really have side quests. It just had a mission, collect chests.
No, you go out of your way to get some stuff.
Cosmetic stuff, but I didn't find any side quests. But I did the story, I found all the chests and all the, echo, the force echoes. So that was nice. It adds to the lore, the worlds and the story. So it was just nice to finish that game, and I felt it was a satisfying ending to the story. Just a nice Star Wars story. And I also defeated the fifth boss on Valheim. So I'm finishing games.
Can you finish Valheim?
Well, once you beat the five bosses, I guess in a way you have. That's another game that's getting updates from the developer. And there's going to be another update called Hearth and Home that's going to be, I guess, construction stuff for building, so you can build a cooler castle or cooler longhouse. So that'll be fun too. Because there's biomes that they still need to flesh out and finish up. I'm sure this one will have a lot of updates as well.
Yeah. Anyways, we're going to go into the news, and first we're going to do two news items which are not on our official list. First, Sony's deciding, you know, we're going to keep the PS3 and Vita stores open. And while I want to congratulate them, it's sort of like they were forced to do this because
it's their own fault that there was backlash in the first place. Like that, yeah. They had no reason to just like close any of that down.
Well,
so for
go ahead.
Like their whole premise was fuck preservation. We need to move forward and focus on our new things. So we're going to get rid of any and all those stores, so we don't have to maintain them anymore.
I think they should have merged all the games that you purchased on PS3 over to the PS4. I mean, that's
no, that's not how it works, though.
I know.
It's already in the same store. Right now, they have a completely different problem, and that is people finding out that, you know what, even if your PSN games on the PS3, they may get fucked, and you'll never be able to play them again if a battery of the CMOS goes out. Because here's how it works. You have a PS3, and it's the same thing with the PS4, which is worse, which I'm going to discuss in a moment. But for the PS3, if you have a PSN game, the game checks the clock. If the clock is off, it checks PSN, and PSN will verify the clock, and then everything's hunky-dory. However, if that battery goes out and you're not connected to PSN, the game will say, you can't play this game because you're a dirty pirate.
Mm-hmm. Unless you replace the battery.
Unless you replace the battery, which is not something. Now, for the PS4, it's even worse. Because not only can you have your PSN games locked out, you can have your disc-based games locked out. Yeah, you thought you had a disc, you're fine? Nope. If it can't do that check, you can't play your disc game on the PS4 if PSN decides to go bye-bye. Or if you don't have a connection and the battery goes out.
That really does suck.
And I'm thinking, why the hell did they do this? The first thing is, there's the same reason why they're closing the PS3, Vita, and PSP stores. By the way, the PSP store is still closing. And that is, well, if we want people to play it, we'll just make a remastered version and release it on our new console, and you can pay for it all over again.
Yeah, that's probably what they'll do.
Well, they're not going to do it now because they're getting merciless PR about this. Merciless. So, there was such an outcry, and the fact of the matter is that with MLB The Show coming out on Game Pass and Xbox Game Pass owners playing it for free, while PlayStation owners have to pay for it, it's not a good look for them. Especially since there's an article from September where Jim Ryan was saying, well, we make $200 million games, so a Game Pass like Microsoft has would not make sense for us. Guess what?
Mm-hmm.
Here's the thing Microsoft's doing. People who don't own an Xbox are getting Game Pass so they can play Game Pass Ultimate, so they can play their Xbox games without owning an Xbox. And guess what's in rare supply right now?
Yeah. It's just ridiculous how batshit hard Sony makes it to, like, not only preserve their old products, but also continue to play their old products. Like, this was completely within their control to not piss everybody off like this.
Yep.
But they decided, you know, we're going to go ahead and shut down those things because we don't care. And and it was only after, and they assumed nobody else cared. And it was only
Would people care about their discs no longer, not being able to have their games anymore?
And it was only after everybody else told Jim Ryan, no, you fucking asshole, we do care, that Jim Ryan was like, oh, jeez, people care.
Can someone tell Jim Ryan there's a lot of people who still have their Nintendos, their original launch Nintendos, their 1985 launch Nintendos, and still play games on it?
And their original Ataris are still out there.
Their original PS1s, PS2s, their Dreamcasts, their Super Nintendos. Oh, God. Super Nintendo is still really hot. I mean, there's a lot. And I know a lot of people who are buying the fat PS3s right now. For those who don't know, the Fat PS3 is the original PS3, which came with the Emotion chip, was basically the PlayStation 2 on a chip. So you could play PlayStation 2 games on it. It's just...
I know a lot of those crashed, though, but I guess you can work them and make mods and fix it. I'm sure somebody has out there.
By the way, that reminds me. I could have bought one, but I decided not to because I was thinking, what game am I going to play on it? But the new Switches are out, and they're basically Switches that you don't have Joy-Cons. They're stuck on the system. You don't pull them off.
Oh, yeah, the Nintendo Switch Lite.
Yeah, it's $200, and I was tempted to buy one, but like I said, you know, I mean, it's focusing, as they say, that it's focusing on the portability, you know, of the Switch.
Yes. Yeah, there's no way to play. There's no way to attach it to a TV and play docked with that one.
Yeah.
You can still connect a Pro Controller up to it, but
it's kind of awkward.
Well, they've always had that little thing on the back of them that it's like a little kickstand.
I guess.
But yeah, it's.
Well, you could also pair it too with I guess Bluetooth or whatever, and.
Yeah, that's true. No, but you still have to somehow hold on to a controller and the device as well. But here's the thing, you know what? It's a less expensive version of the Switch, and almost all of them are gone. The only ones that aren't gone are the ones that are sort of orangey. I don't know why. I think orange is a good color. Coral is the name of it, but it's a good idea, you know. I mean, it's basically the 2DS version of the 3DS.
Yeah. That is true.
Yep. So let me ask you a question. How are your Joy-Cons, Scott?
They, two of them drift. I guess I just deal with it. Zelda, it was really bad. I had to always use Pro Controller to play. But the other games, like I guess Animal Crossing, it's not so bad. I'm not like in a life and death situation, so the drifting can be dealt with. You just kind of have to compensate for it.
Yeah,
but it's pain.
Yeah. The other big news. Oh boy, what was it? Damn it. Hey, I lost it. There's other big news that I wanted to... the Resident Evil event happened, and I know TJ is all over that.
Yes.
So, tell us, what were your impressions of the Resident Evil event?
Man, there was a lot of stuff in there. For one... They're bringing back the Mercenaries mode.
Yep. Which, they just announced that today.
They announced that during the event.
Really?
It was if a lot of people's gripes about Resident Evil 7. 3 remake.
Oh, the remake.
Was that there was not a lot of replayability after you were done with the main game. And a part of that was that, like, they didn't include the Mercenaries mode, which originally came out with Resident Evil 3 in 1999. And that is a mode in which you basically take a character and you go with like a certain amount of weapons, bullets, and healing items through a gauntlet of areas in the Resident Evil game. And you just try to survive and beat the clock to get to the end of it all. And you can get more time by killing enemies or finding time bonuses. But this time around, you're also going to be able to find certain spots that will give you perks for your run, such as like you might get one that offers you a choice of handgun damage, faster move speed, or like better healing out of items. So you pick one of those, and it sort of supplies a roguelike element to it. This has always been like when you're done with the Resident Evil main game, this is where you like challenge yourself. This is where you play against other people and like put up a record time on a leaderboard. And that's fun. That's fun to see it back in the Resident Evil series. And it looks like they've got it set up in a cool way that add some new features that it'll be fun to play with in the new game. They also announced that Resident Evil will be doing a crossover with Dead by Daylight, which I am stoked to hear more about that. I thought that they were just going to be doing a charm for a second, because like the director of Dead by Daylight comes on, and they do a little teaser, and you see like a little umbrella.
Wait! Before we go on, describe the function of charms in Dead by Daylight.
Basically, there are trinkets that you can put on your character's hip that like are usually related to either an event you've played in, or like an achievement that you've completed. Mm. And when they showed the teaser, you saw like what looked like a charm fall off one of the survivors, and it was an umbrella logo. I was like, oh, they're just gonna do like a Resident Evil crossover like charm. No, they're gonna do a full chapter. Which is going to be like the kind of treatment they gave to Silent Hill when they brought that into the game, which included doing a character, a survivor, a killer, and a full map. And they plan on announcing the full details of what that content is going to be on May 25th. So that was cool as hell. Of course, everybody got a bigger look at Lady Dimitrescu is how I learned you're supposed to say that name.
For those who don't know, she's the giant 9-foot-tall vampire woman who's 96. Dressed in... And she's dressed in a white Victorian outfit.
And she has an ass for days.
And but, boobs, too. I mean, she's got some giant boobs.
She has assets. We'll say she has
a big
assets.
Lady.
She knows how to use them. I mean, here's the thing. There are so many people who are into giantesses. That is a fetish, and don't go down that rabbit hole. I beg you, don't go down that rabbit hole.
The funny thing is that Resident Evil is like, we invite you to come down the rabbit hole, because they leaned into it.
They stuck her boobs in your face, basically.
No, basically, like, in the newest trailer, there's a part where she, like, gets a knife and slices the main character's hand, and then just sucks off his palm.
Yeah.
And
Ethan Winters, come on, say his name. Everybody else says his name in that damn trailer.
It looked like he cut his own hand. He was like, let's see what kind of whatever you are. It looked like he cut his own hand.
Whatever, there was sucking going on.
Yeah.
Either she or one of the sisters cut his palm with a knife and then did a big old suck on his hand. And it's like, okay, Capcom. You know exactly what you're doing when you did that.
They know their audience. You know,
what'd you expect her to do?
Well, no, I mean, they go nuts over what's her... Oh, what is her name again? The lady with the gun. I forgot her name all of a sudden. Who's super popular.
The gun leg lady or a different gun?
Yeah, she appeared in 2 and 3 and, you know...
Ada Wong.
Yeah, they go nuts over her. They know their audience. They know how to sell. They know how to sell the female characters in that series. Yep. Who's that?
That scene was just ridiculously overindulgent.
And then you have an enormously fat guy who's a tub of goo, who's sort of like Casper Gutman from Maltese Falcon.
But yeah, they had a demo this last weekend. Mm-hmm. I got my vaccine shot on Saturday, so I actually couldn't. I got conked out. Like, it made me early the 30th.
Hey, you know what? That might be a good thing. So you can enter a resident. It's coming out this year, so it's not like it's going to be in 2022 or something like that.
Yeah, it's like May 7th.
Yeah.
So it's literally right around the corner. But they're also going to have a demo this coming weekend.
His name is the Duke. Okay.
The previous demo was in the village itself.
Yeah.
Which, props to them for actually showing off some of the village. It's mostly been in the castle and the dungeon. And so we finally got a good look at, like, the outside, like, the area right around the castle. And then this next weekend, the coming demo is going to be focused on the castle itself.
Yeah. They also have the hunting... and cooking portion of that game too, in which Ethan can shoot ducks or chickens or goats or pigs or fish, and then take them to Duke's Kitchen, and he can build himself a meal that'll give him buffs.
Mm-hmm. Permanent buffs at that.
Yeah.
Like, you can permanently increase your health if you catch a certain fish or whatever.
You can also upgrade your weapons, craft ammo, and do stuff like that. I mean, it makes me a little worried because that's sort of sounding like a little bit of reboot Tomb Raider, but I don't think it's going to be like that if it's a permanent buff anyway. So. Mm-hmm.
And it's like, it would only really be a problem if, like, you couldn't progress in the game without getting those buffs, because then that would be annoying. Mm. I'm sure that, like, if you give me all the opportunity and tools I need to make it through the game, like, buffless, I think that's a cool choice that you get to make.
Yep. And the other big thing they announced was Resident Evil 4 VR for the Oculus Quest 2, and they're supposed to release some information about it this week. They haven't released it yet. But it's going to be an Oculus Quest 2 exclusive. Maybe. But Facebook is making it sound like it's going to be a... there's going to be a new demo on May 2nd. Of Resident Evil 8. Yeah.
The next one is coming up on April 24th, this coming Saturday.
Really?
Yes.
So, here's the thing. I wasn't that big a fan of Resident Evil 4, and I'm wondering if my opinion will change in VR.
Oh, yeah. Like, Resident Evil 4, Oculus Quest 2 exclusive, which is a strange thing to me. I don't know why they focused it entirely on Oculus Quest 2 and didn't just make it an Oculus Store exclusive.
Yeah. They had PSVR support for Resident Evil 7.
Mm-hmm. And I'm almost certain that eventually it'll come to all platforms, but it's interesting that this is, like, one of the first major Oculus Quest 2 exclusives I've seen.
Hmm. And here's the thing. I didn't buy the Oculus Quest 2 for exclusives, really. I just got it because it's a VR thing, which I can play VR games from my PC, you know, and, of course, play a little bit of Fruit Ninja.
Are you looking forward to trying out Resident Evil 4 and having a large man in a paper bag on his head running
with a chainsaw? I'm wondering if it's going to be easier for me to shoot those blue thingies.
Yeah, maybe. I just know that, like, that experience by itself might be, like, heebie-jeebie central.
Oh, no, well, forget the guy in the bag head with the chainsaw. I mean, the first zombie siege that you're in the house, you know, you have to keep pushing down those ladders and, you know, and that guy, I don't remember his name. He's not much help.
Mm-hmm. The Spanish guy with the...
Yeah, he's not much help.
And if you accidentally shoot him too many times, he kills you.
Anyways, but yeah, I mean, I'm interested. Like I said, I'm not a big Resident Evil 4 fan, but I'm willing to try it out in VR.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. Like, I'm really interested. It doesn't look like they've upgraded the graphics too incredibly much. It actually kind of looks just like the older graphics, but that's not so bad.
They don't need to. The other big show off the past week, which really has my heart going, is watching all the gameplay video of Diablo 2 Remastered. I know I'm going to play that endlessly. I'm going to have to find all my old friends who I played co-op with, too.
Yeah. I haven't had a chance to watch any of it. I haven't had a chance to really dig into any of the gameplay that came from the preview of it.
Oh, God. It is so sweet.
But a lot of people have been saying that it's, like, it's everything it's supposed to be.
And here's something that people don't... That people don't realize until they actually play is that the sound is remastered, and it's not even remastered. The original game had to compress the audio to fit, right? Mm-hmm. They don't need to do that anymore. Now everything is crystal clear, and it's almost a different game because of that. Of course, that ting when a gem drops will always be like magic to my heart.
Mm-hmm.
Every time you hear that little ting when a gem drops...
One of the absolute best features I think I've seen out of content for it so far is that remastered and legacy graphics are toggleable to a single key press on the keyboard.
That's basic. I mean, you can do that with Halo. You can do that with a lot of games.
I know, but, like, it's nice to see that, like, if you want to go back and forth between, like, what it looked like before and what it looks like now.
Well, the funny thing is that they didn't really change that much in terms of graphics at all. They have better lighting effects, better, you know, particle effects and all that stuff, but the textures are just basically a little bit upgraded, and the characters don't look too different from what they did. So basically what you're seeing is a very, really, really sharp Diablo 2. That's not entirely true. In the Outer World, they added a ton of structures. Like, you'll come upon burned out towns where there used to be nothing. So they did add those Easter eggs. So when you do the tog, it'll be like, here's a town. Oh, it's gone. So I strongly suggest you watch the Twitch videos and the gameplay videos. You will fall in love all over again. Because here's the thing, yeah. You know, Outriders finally did looter shooter the loot grind well.
Yeah.
And no one's ever topped Diablo 2 in that regard, not even World of Warcraft.
Yeah, I agree with that.
So anyways, finally going to go into game news. PC Cloud Gaming for Xbox Cloud Gaming for PC beta invite sent out tomorrow, which will be April 20th, from PC Gamer. Microsoft said in December 2020 that its Xbox Cloud Gaming service would be coming to PC sometime in the first half of 2021, allowing Game Pass subscribers to instantly stream games rather than having to download them first. Today, it followed through on that promise, to a limited extent at least, announcing that the beta test invitations will start out to, quote-unquote, select Xbox Game Pass Ultimate subscribers on April 20th. There are a few qualifications, aside from being a Game Pass Ultimate subscriber, required in order to take part in the test. Access to the service will be supported through either the Edge or Chrome browsers, or, and here's the big thing, Safari if you're on an iOS device. The beta is also coming to Apple phones and tablets. And you'll need a controller, either wired or Bluetooth, or custom touch controls for games that support them on iOS. Microsoft said that the early stage of the test will be dedicated to, quote-unquote, fine-tuning features and creating a consistent experience across platforms while making sure games are running their best. More than 100 Game Pass games will be available through the cloud, and more invitations to the test will be sent out in future waves. The one question I have is did they just circumvent Apple? Because they can't really stop them from streaming something on a browser. Apple can't.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering if this is their way of telling Apple, well, fuck you.
Aren't they Apple's competition anyway? So I don't
know. No. Microsoft and Apple haven't been competition at all lately. Especially not in the gaming sphere. And here's the thing, you know what? I don't think people see Apple Arcade and Xbox Game Pass as real competition. I think they see it as, well, we can do both.
Google and Apple are more in competition.
Google and Microsoft are more in competition.
Well, I was going to say, what with Android and and the Google Store.
Yeah, the iPhone.
Yeah. I mean, hooray. It's, you know, Apple owners, you're not screwed. You finally get to have Game Pass if you want it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
this was an absolute delight to see that this is just suddenly getting rolling out. Like, the more versatility you have with this program, which I, like, this was, from the very conception of Project xCloud, which I should have stuck with xCloud as the name. It's a better name. Like, much like Scorpio.
I think people still say xCloud.
I do. Like, I say it all the time. I'd rather say it than Xbox Game Cloud.
Here's the thing. You can... It's still Xbox... You know, xCloud. Xbox Cloud? xCloud. You know, it's like... People will shorten it to xCloud anyway. Including Microsoft, if they want to. But here's the other thing, is that it'll allow me to play MLB The Show on PC.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, this is a cool rollout. Just like out of the blue, out of nowhere, just a fantastic surprise.
Scott?
Yep. It's cool. I mean, I don't think I'll. I'm not really interested in gaming streaming services. It's nice that it's available for PC, and if it can go on Apple computers, and that should make a whole bunch of Apple users very happy to be able to play these games. Yeah.
I mean, I'm already having a hell of a time with a hell of a good time with xCloud already, and being able to do it on my PC browser might make things a little bit easier for me when it comes to streaming on Twitch. I was able to record MLB the Show using the natural streaming that you can actually stream from your Xbox to TV easily, you know. But it's not the same as just being able to play the game on PC right there. So yeah, I hope I get selected.
Yep.
Because I am an Xbox Game Pass Ultimate subscriber, and I do have Edge. I don't use Chrome anymore. Because Chrome was such a, it was a memory hog even more than Firefox, and B, there were a lot of that. Chrome doesn't offer much protection. I got a lot of malware from Chrome that I had to get rid of with malware bites. Which is why I'm staying far away from Chrome. I don't know if it's the same for everybody else, but
and it was constantly telling me that the Chrome was getting stuff, and as soon as I uninstalled Chrome, everything was gone and clean.
At least with Firefox, you can use NoScript, which I do, and I use Edge for everything else if NoScript is getting in the way too much. Anyways. Moving on. Go ahead, TJ.
Alrighty. Rumor, Battlefield 6 not coming to Xbox One or PS4 from GamesRadar. Battlefield 6 might not be coming to previous generation consoles, according to a well-known leaker. If you're still gaming on your PS4 or Xbox One, you might want to think about upgrading if you want to play Battlefield 6 when it releases later this year. This is according to leaker Tom Henderson, who has previously leaked information in the slightly futuristic setting of Battlefield 6 and GTA 6, and that GTA 6 will be sticking to the modern day. Henderson goes on to speculate that this could be the primary driving force behind the rumors that Battlefield 6 will be launching into Xbox Game Pass, as this would significantly boost the day one player count, which would offset the loss of players from previous gen consoles.
I'm going to say something. I wonder if it'll be not only that, but Game Pass for PC. Because a lot of gamers play Battlefield 6 on PC. They prefer it on PC. And if Microsoft is offering day one Game Pass for Battlefield 6, oh my god. That'll make a stampede to people doing Game Pass for PC simply because they won't have to pay full price for Battlefield 6.
Yeah. I don't know. Like, Xbox has definitely been picking up more and more, like, interesting day one releases for Xbox Game Pass. Outriders was a fun surprise. And then, like, MLB The Show was a fun surprise. And they have that partnership with EA now, where EA yep. Play games are accessible via Xbox Game Pass. So, like, it would make sense. It would make absolute sense for EA and Xbox to further that partnership by doing a big one like Battlefield 6 as part of the Game Pass on day one.
Do we want to talk about Microsoft and Nintendo right now? Because there's a lot of scuttlebutt going on with Phil Spencer and his damn shelf.
Yeah. Every time we see like a new picture or a new video with Phil Spencer now, it's like scan the environment, put on your detective mode, and
because one of the videos they realized, hey, look, he had an Xbox Series S sitting right on his desk before sitting on his shelf before we even knew what it was. here's the thing. So the rumor is going on that Microsoft and Nintendo have a big announcement coming. And I'm just inclined to say, oh, Master Chief is going to be in Smash Brothers. Great. That's the level of surprise I get from it. I mean, hey, look, they put Minecraft in the damn thing, so...
I know. It's just it's amazing to me how much they keep adding to Smash Brothers. Here's another character. How many characters are in that game now? Well over 100, have to be.
But imagine if Microsoft announces that they made an agreement with Nintendo over hosting Game Pass. Or if they were helping Nintendo do a Game Pass for Nintendo games, which I know, if the Switch had a Game Pass system, like Microsoft Game Pass system, and it opened up all of the NES and SNES games, they would just go nuts.
Virtual console is limited right now, but yeah, they have a huge library that people would love them to add all of their games, not just the strange ones that they've added so far, with like the rest of them. But like on Virtual Console, you can play any game, well, any game that's in that console that you want to. I think you were saying Game Pass, you can only play two games at a time.
Huh?
That's what you were saying. You said you were going to put Octopath off.
I can only play two games at a time personally. What are you talking about?
Okay.
No, you can play. You can have as many downloaded games as your hard drive can fit.
Okay then.
No, I have Oculus downloaded and ready to play. I just haven't had the time for it because I've had other things that are drawing my attention. And here's the thing: I can play it on PC or on Xbox. I'll still get the same achievements either way, and it's cross save. It's cross platform saves, so I can play on my Xbox and continue it on my PC if I want to. If I'm going to play Octopath Traveler, I want to have my full attention. And right now, Immortal Phoenix Rising is like, oh, I'll play you first. So, do you play Battlefield 6 at all?
Do I play Battlefield at all? I haven't played Battlefield since Bad Company 2.
Oh. By the way, that's on Game Pass. I was surprised to see it.
The new ones haven't been all that great to me when I've like taken demos of them and checked them out in early options, but either way, it does, as far as like a pickup goes, I think that we're gonna like it's odd to see a game that is already considering talking about being next gen exclusive. We're seeing a little bit of that already with like.
I think it's because Battlefield 6 will have full destructibility, and it requires extra manpower.
That. I mean, to be honest, Cyberpunk 2077 definitely should have been next gen exclusive, but they wanted that PS4, Xbox.
By the way, in news, two things. One, Cyberpunk 2077 turned a huge profit.
Yes.
And two, CD Projekt Red is going to No Man's Sky the shit out of it, and that is. Keep adding content, keep improving it, and get on the good graces of people again.
Mm-hmm. And they will. People will forget. People will always forget.
Or forgive, at least. I mean, people forgave Hello Games, so.
Yeah.
It's like, the last update, it's, all the comments were, okay, we forgive you already. Like, no, must do more updates for No Man's Sky. More free updates. Same thing with Stardew Valley.
But yeah, like it's still interesting to me to see games that are already going full on next gen exclusive. Battlefield in particular, that's one that I would have expected to be like a cross gen thing, like what Call of Duty has been doing. But
they put Battlefield on the Switch before.
But if they feel the need to do it that way, then. Hopefully it'll be of high quality and not like the previous Battlefield games where it's kind of like the Frostbite engine continues to show its age.
Well, here's the thing. They took their sweet time with Battlefield 6. Because it's been a long time since... Wait, did Battlefield 5 come before, or was it a different game? Was it Battlefield 5 that was the last one?
It was.
Okay.
It was.
Because you had Battlefield 1, which...
It was Battlefield 4, then Battlefield 1, then Battlefield 5.
Yeah. Someone doesn't know how to count, but, yeah. the thing is that... Bad Company 2 is on EA Pass, which means it's on Game Pass, so... At some point, I might actually try it. What's fun is I love reading the reviews of people who are finding backwards compatible games and gushing about how they used to love it as kids and all the memories that the game brings up. And it brings me right back to Jim Ryan and his ideas. Because if you ever read those reviews, like I read the reviews for Jade Empire, you know, it's like people are just gushing about how they used to play it when they were a little kid and how they still love it now and stuff like that, you know. There is a market for these old games.
Jade Empire was a good game.
Yeah.
Classic.
With
it's well now on current computers.
And it had the best twist of almost any video game that I played. And that's including Knights of the Old Republic. Because I could suss out, yeah, my main character was Revan. that was telegraphed. The twist in Jade Empire, which I refuse to tell anybody, is so intelligent. And so shocking. And yet, if you play the game again, you start seeing things that the characters are doing and saying, oh, what?
They hinted something was up.
They hinted a lot of things. There were a lot of little things that you should have noticed the first time through. Like, when a certain character calls out another character, you think he's scolding him, but he's actually deliberately making him angry so that he'll go get his father and attack. You know, the entire game changes after that moment when you play it again. You say, oh, shit. He was the villain, and I didn't even notice he was the villain. Like I said, I'm not gonna give away the game is from 2007. I'm still not giving – no, even earlier. 2006, I think. It's a 2006 game. I refuse to reveal anything about it. It is that good. Speaking of which, I am hella looking forward to Mass Effect Remastered. And I'm trying to decide if I want to buy it on my PC or if I want to buy it on my console. And I think I'm leaning towards my PC. Because it's easier to stream from there and record and all that stuff. Are you looking forward to Mass Effect Remastered?
If only because I want to play the hell out of the remastered version of Mass Effect 1.
Yeah,
it looks like they've done so much good work on the first game.
Yeah,
and like I like the story and I like the narrative play.
The game is clunky. Yeah, we know. The game is very clunky.
But everything else about that game is a freaking chore.
It's clunky. The combat is clunky. The Mako sections are clunky.
The animations are just like. Stiff and robotic.
Once person said in a Mass Effect 1 review, it was like, at least they're a lot less robotic than the characters in Mass Effect Andromeda.
Yeah. the amount of detail that they've poured into, and also just like the way that the environments look now.
Yeah.
You look at the way that like even the first level where you first run into the Reaper, not knowing what it is.
Yeah.
Like the screenshots of it in the remaster version are vastly different from like what we saw in 2006.
I always stop in my tracks just to watch the Reaper go up into the sky, all the way into the sky until it vanishes. Because if you move forward, then all the husks start attacking and all that stuff. I stop knowing that that's going to happen. I just watch it launch into the sky.
Yeah. And they've like revamped all that environmental storytelling for this remaster, and I'm so excited to see like all of the upgrades that they've made to this game.
Sweet.
All in all, like it looks like Mass Effect 2 and 3 are just going to be like
remasters
more pretty than they were before.
Yeah.
But Mass Effect 1 looks like a full on remake.
There's only one thing I really, really, really want, and that is in Mass Effect 2 to decide when to turn on the Reaper IFF.
Yeah.
Because I hate having to recruit Legion last and two missions before the ending. I want to have them around, damn it.
Would be some quality of life improvements would be really nice in the second and third game.
We'll see. I just think I'm proud of the fact that my first playthrough of Mass Effect 2, I saved everybody.
I was not able to save Morden the first time I played, because Morden is one of the hardest ones to keep alive.
Oh, it's easy to keep him alive. Just have him escort everybody back to the ship.
Yeah, but if you put him on anything else beforehand, or don't have everything highly upgraded, or missed out on anything that like could have helped you, then Morden is the most likely to die out of anything.
Also, don't put two powerful characters in your final team, because then someone will die. You have to keep one squishy person and one big guy for everybody to survive. And the thing is, I did all the logical choices, you know, for, I chose Legion. I chose Samara for the biotic bubble.
Yeah, and it doesn't matter how cool Miranda thinks she is. Don't listen to her when she's telling you she's got the psionic.
Well, here's the thing. there's only two biotics powerful enough to keep that bubble open, and that is Jack and Samara. And here's the thing. They can do it. The problem comes at the very, very end is that they're so exhausted. Both Jack and Samara still have enough oomph that they can just blast all the everybody out. You know, no one else can, and that gets one of them kidnapped by those flying things. You know, so she's right. She just doesn't have all the information. I chose Garrus as the team leader twice. You can have Garrus, Miranda, or Jacob as the team leaders. And that's basically it. And then you have to have a big guy and a small guy, a big guy and a small guy at the very, very end as your final party. I always choose Grunt in that party because it's sometimes when you slide, you actually catch him from falling. It's just hilarious to see this big guy being held by this tiny little person, you know. I also like to have Miranda because when Shepard decides to blow up, if he decides to blow up the Reaper base. The elusive man tells Miranda to stop him, and she just tells him to fuck off. Says, this is my way of resigning. She tells him off in the very last moment. And here's the thing. I loved Mass Effect 3. As a matter of fact, I think I'm in the minority when I say I like Mass Effect 3 better than 1 and 2. And that was even before the Citadel DLC. But the Citadel DLC just made everybody happy.
Yeah. It's interesting that they actually had a DLC out of the first one that, like, they lost the code for, and it's not going to be able to come back. I forget which one it was, but there was one that was, like, whatever happened, they just could not rewrite the code for it.
Well, I know that Mass Effect Andromeda's DLC was dropped. Because it didn't make any money.
Pinnacle Station.
Oh, Pinnacle Station. The thing is that it's basically RMAX.
Yeah. Something happened and, like, they basically had a, the data for that DLC got corrupted.
They're also dropping the Mass Effect 3 multiplayer, which a lot of people are disappointed by.
Yeah, I mean, like, what I want to know is, what are they doing to replace that experience to make sure that, like...
No, it's just the Galaxy Redness no longer has an effect. I mean, you have 100% Galaxy Redness.
Okay, well, that's just kind of a cop-out, but whatever. Getting out of the multiplayer, that's fine.
But here's the thing, the multiplayer was fine, even if they didn't have Galaxy Readiness. I mean, a lot of people love that mode, you know, and hopefully, you know, what they can do is that maybe they can have their own free version of it that's separate from the trilogy and just have the Mass Effect. I think the main problem that they have is that it's taking up server space and they don't want to. Mm. I don't know, because a lot of people were worried about the Mass Effect 3 multiplayer and were stunned when they really had fun with it. Because it was fun mode, you know. It was horde mode over and over and over. Anyways, we got to move on to the next item. Go ahead, Scott.
Okay, hold on. Let's see.
BioShock 4.
BioShock 4. Job listings appear to confirm an open world and side quest. This is from PC Gamer. Cloud Chamber, the 2K game studio tasked with developing a new BioShock game, has listed a handful of new dev positions on its website. The job descriptions appear to confirm at least two things about the long in gestation project that'll be open world, and that'll most likely, and that like most open world games, it'll have both primary and secondary quests. The description for the senior writer role is the most illuminating, apparently confirming both open world and quest format. We're hoping to find someone who can weave impactful character-driven stories in an open-world setting, it reads, while later it specifies that successful candidate will brainstorm primary and secondary mission content and design. The last BioShock game, BioShock Infinite, was released in 2013. Planned a follow-up from another 2K studio was canceled in 2016.
Go ahead.
They don't have a main writer, I guess. Is that what they're saying they need? I don't know.
Here's the thing. Yeah, for a senior writer role. Yeah, I mean, here's the thing. People like to talk about, oh God, I forgot his name already. A writer. But he did a really bad job with BioShock Infinite. And what's funny is that I like the story in BioShock 2 a lot more. Here's the question I have is, is BioShock 4 going to take place in Rapture? Really? Really?
I would hope not.
It just seems a little bit strange that they want a BioShock 4 and they don't have the story.
Here's the thing. I'm pretty sure that they made the set pieces already, and now they just need someone to tie it all in together. That's how they write the Uncharted games, by the way, and you can tell. They make the missions first, set pieces, and then they just make a story that's going to force them into those situations. Oh, it's a sinking ship? Okay, let's find a way to get that into the story.
Mm. That can make for very awkward writing, I think.
Yes, and Uncharted is extremely awkward writing.
Yeah.
If it's going to be an open world, I wonder if it could be a prequel. I mean, allow you to explore all of Rapture and, you know. I mean, here's the thing. There's a lot of shit that was going on just before New Year's Eve. 1960.
Yes.
And splicers were already a thing. Big daddies were already a thing. Little sisters were already a thing. It's just that on New Year's Eve, everything went to hell. So...
yeah. Like, things were starting to fall apart, and then Frank Fontaine declared open war against Andrew Ryan. And it's like, there's a lot there. There's a lot of agents in that whole chaos. Like, major characters and minor characters that got caught up in the fray. The whole bit with Dr. Steinman is always, like, one of the freakiest. And that whole arc of that story is such an intensely creepy...
He wanted
creepy,
to be Picasso.
intensely creepy and like, horror... It's like a horror narrative.
The entire game's a horror narrative.
But that one in particular is like, yeah, I guess you're right. There are definitely other parts that...
Hey, look, you know what my favorite moment is, and I think it's everybody else's favorite moment, and that's with Sandra Cohen.
Mm-hmm.
When he starts doing the spotlights in the ballet, and you have the Fairy King, the Plum Fairy Waltz is going on as you're shotgunning everybody, and you better have a shotgun because that's the best weapon for that moment. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, let's see. You know, you could. I mean, you had underwater with Columbia, and you had in the air with. I mean, you had underwater with Rapture, and you had in the air with Columbia. I suppose, you know, you could have an island if you're going to have an open world, like that's on pontoons, a man-made island. I don't know. It's just an odd project to have. You know, because what is the story you're going to be telling?
Hmm.
They apparently don't even know themselves.
Oh, that's true. Hey, yeah, we have this in outer space. We want you to explain how it's in outer space. Oh, that's, you know, here's the thing. We don't know much about the future of the BioShock universe.
It would be like if,
Oh, wait a minute.
Has a Starfield game. He's like, okay, Microsoft, you bought us. Now, tell us why you want us to make Starfield. I don't know.
I just realized, and I'm willing to bet you this is the setting, because they have the portals and all that stuff from BioShock Infinite. And I'm willing to bet you it's going to be the next setting. The next setting will be a terraformed Mars.
That would be interesting.
Sort of a John Carter sort of, you know, situation. And I'm talking about Victorian Mars, not actual Mars. You know? Cloudpunk Mars. Anyway, I don't have a pressing need for a BioShock 4. I don't know if I ever if anybody really wanted a BioShock 4. But then again, a lot of people didn't like the idea of a different studio than What's-His-Face's studio doing BioShock 2, and I ended up liking BioShock 2 a lot more than BioShock, which was not a popular opinion back in 2010. I'm gonna tell you.
Yeah, I feel like the entire legacy of like BioShock has been tainted by the ridiculousness of
Infinite?
Irrational games and his face that used to run it.
Run Warren Spector.
Was it Warren Spector? No, I was
no, the, no. Wait. It's the other guy. Oh, Ken Levine.
Ken Levine. Because Ken Levine, like, was all about that whole auteur-type persona that's behind the whole directorship of it. But it was, like, to a degree that was, like, stifling and also abusive.
Here's the thing about BioShock Infinite. People were intrigued by the ending, but when they really thought about it, they realized it made no fucking sense.
I mean, I like BioShock.
I love Thief the Dark Project and System Shock 2, and he's responsible for that.
Yes. I like BioShock, and I like BioShock 2. Not so.
By the way, Warren Spector was responsible for Deus Ex.
Yeah. Not so crazy about BioShock Infinite, but, like, I don't know. I think those games are fine for what they were, and, I don't think we need more of them.
You know,
I mean, there are things that do what BioShock did better than BioShock anyways nowadays.
You know, I mean, Warren Spector's working with Ken Levine on System Shock 3. Whenever that's coming out.
I would almost rather just play, like, the Night Dive Studios remake of
I'm still waiting for that fucking thing.
Yeah. They actually showed off some pretty decent amounts of gameplay this last time, though.
Yeah, but I already paid for it, damn it.
Yeah. I'll get there. I believe in them.
But actually, you know, Other Side Entertainment actually bought the rights from Night Dive to do System Shock 3.
Mm-hmm.
So.
But they've had plenty of their own issues figuring that whole thing out.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I have to check out Baldur's Gate 3. There's been a bunch of patches, so I'll have to see what's going on.
Yes, you can be a sentient badger now.
Well, I want to be Rocky Raccoon, huh?
It is one of my favorite screenshots they've ever put out for that game. It's just a giant six foot tall badger sitting patiently and politely on a stone bench.
And that's a druid who is in animal form.
I know, but it's still funny.
Yeah.
One of the funny things is that the vampire that you can join in your that can join you in your party, you can make him swear not to drain blood from anything that you can talk to. And if you're a druid, he just says that limits me a lot, since druids can talk to animals. And one of the YouTube comments said, just wait until he finds out that druids can talk to plants too.
If Larian Studios is truly brave, they'll let me stay in animal form as a druid during dialogue options.
I'm pretty sure you can. Anyways.
I want to talk to people as a bear.
But you already are a bear. What are you talking about? You're already a bear. That's a sideways motion.
But I want to talk to you as the animal variety bear.
Anyways, we're going to move on to the next item. Civ 6's final free game update adds 3 new units, 2 new maps, and more. This comes to us from Eurogamer. For access to details, Civilization 6's final free game update, quote-unquote, of the season, ahead of its launch on April 22nd, with the new additions to include 3 new units, 2 new true start maps, and a whole bunch of balancing tweaks for older civilizations. On the map front, players will be given the opportunity to sprawl their way across new Mediterranean and huge true start maps, and those will be accompanied by 3 new units for use by all civilizations, the Line Infantry, Man-at-Arms, and the Trebuchet. Perhaps, and I'm shocked that they didn't have the Trebuchet already. Wasn't the Trebuchet a thing in the previous Civs?
Yes, it was in Civ 5. It was a very well-used unit, at least in the early game.
Anyways, let me just finish the article. Perhaps the most significant inclusion, however, comes from the form of balancing changes to numerous existing civilizations, so they play nicely with the newer additions. Civilization 6's final free game update, which is part of its new Frontier Pass development roadmap, will be free to all players when it launches. So what I liked is that you had to wheel that trebuchet, and then you had to wait for it to open up so you can use it.
You had to settle it down. I think fortify it or something. And then it would take a turn to do that, and then, of course, next turn you can start firing it. You better have units in front of it to protect it, because it's very vulnerable.
But it takes down those city walls real fast.
The Man-at-Arms will also have replacement unique units. The Samurai Berserker will replace it along as well as the Kaver, I think it's called, from one of the other civilizations. And there's a lot of little minor tweaks that are going to the previous civilizations to, I guess, give them better balance with the new stuff that's being introduced.
Yeah, because the new civilizations have certain powers.
Yep.
And
I think there's a lot of love in this series that's been worked on. People have been really working hard to get all these different civs in, all these different units, all these different aspects, and then keep the whole thing balanced and creating new scenarios to play in. It's been a massive undertaking.
I'm still burned out on Civ 6 because I tried to play some a couple of days ago, and it's like, I don't know, I'm not in the mood.
Yeah.
And it's $40 a lot to ask for the Horizon Pass. So I'm going to wait until the Horizon Pass is discounted, whenever that's going to be.
Probably in the winter.
Yeah, and then they'll be announcing Civilization 7. I was like, oh, God.
that's the other thing I've been wondering about. So when is Civ 7 coming? You know, and I don't even know if I want it. I don't know what I want from it, and I'd have to wait and see. I mean, I'm sure that's what they'll do, because that's been their main bread and butter, it feels like, the longest time.
Yep. And I saw Dan is still playing it. Still playing a lot of Civ 6. I bet he's playing it right now, let me say.
I don't know. He might not be, because
I wonder how many hours he has on that now. He has to have over 1,000, maybe 2,000 hours on it.
Not online.
No.
Let's see. I think I can find that out.
Well, we can all find it out. We all have Steam.
Yeah, he has over 1,000 hours.
Yeah. But he was playing... He hasn't played in almost 2 days. That's shocking. That's what I saw him playing Civ 6. Seriously.
He plays like every other weekend now. But I would say probably each Civ, he has over 1,000 hours.
He has Civ 13, almost 13,000 hours on record.
Yeah.
Well, he's been playing Ticket to Ride. I'm going to have to ask him about that. That's one thing about Steam. It allows you to be a real stalker.
It might help you say, like, oh, he's playing that game. We can play together.
I know.
I don't know.
He introduced me to Town of Salem, and he hasn't been playing that in a long while. And I've been playing Nightly. That's the one thing that's the one thing, by the way. You talk about Minecraft, right? Town of Salem is my Minecraft. Right. I played that almost, a few times. And I am so devious. I'm going to tell you something. When someone that you tricked into helping you. I mean, when you screw someone over badly and you basically won and tricked them into thinking that you were their ally and they die and you win the game and they're angry at you and they're calling you a liar and a traitor and how dare you and that wasn't fair. I get all warm and goosebumpy about that. That makes me feel good. It's a fucking traitor game, dumbass. That's what happens.
Yeah. Don't take it seriously or don't take it personal.
I tell them, guess what? I win, you lose, game over, and I won fair and square. Play better. Get good. Fortunately, they don't know who you are. I mean, they can find out your username, but, they never do that. I mean, your real username. Because at the end, they show who played as who, No one ever looks at that. It's sort of like, so screw you. I mean, I've been playing traitor games for decades now. This is basically Werewolf. I've been playing games like Werewolf and Avalon and Resistance and Secret Hitler and Battlestar Galactica, all that stuff. Dude, I am an expert at these kind of games. Even if I don't know who you are, I know how to trick you. I know how to sell it. And I'm always the same, either I'm good or evil. That's the way you do it. You never change your personality. Because people will notice that shit. Anyways, we're gonna move on to the next item. Gohan. Go ahead, TJ.
Alrighty. Nintendo says it will focus on more original game series in the future. From VGC. Nintendo President Shintaro Furukawa has said that the company will invest more in more original games in the future, in addition to supporting its core franchises. The Japanese giant has one of the richest portfolios of franchises in gaming, but the majority of its intellectual properties were created in the 1980s and 1990s. In the decades since, it is mostly focused on expanding these series rather than creating entirely new ones.
That, in other words, they've been milking that shit like a farmer.
Mm-hmm. Over the past 20 years, the company's most significant original IPs were Splatoon, Wii Sports, and Pikmin.
By the way, Pikmin came out in 2001, to give you an idea.
Yeah. Splatoon was the last one, and that one came out in 2015. The last big one.
Yeah.
Speaking in a new Japanese interview with Nikkei, that's behind a paywall, Furukawa said that the company would commit to creating more original game franchises in the future and emphasized that the Switch firm would need to continue to innovate in order to maintain its relevance within the increasingly competitive home entertainment marketplace. Later in the interview, Furukawa reiterated that Nintendo was continuously thinking about new hardware. "We are constantly building up ideas for the new consoles the market is expecting, but there are some things we can't do now due to technology and cost constraints." And one of those things that he's talking about when he mentions that last line is that there is a huge semiconductor famine going on worldwide right now. And yeah. A part of it is
a fucking $1 capacitor. That's what's holding everything up. A $1 capacitor.
A part of it is due to COVID and the fact that factories were closed last year.
And the other part of it is due to the fact that the United States is embargoing a certain company in China, because they accuse him of making weapons, and so now we don't have that. We don't have that major source of microchips.
But this is worldwide. Like, this famine is going on worldwide.
Oh, I know, but I'm just also saying that the fact that the United States has an embargo against this company doesn't help either.
But more importantly, the fact of the matter is, like, that last year, as factories were shut down due to restrictions and, like, basically cleaning up and sanitizing everything, demand just continued to go up. And, like, as people were staying home from school, you had an increase in demand for home computers and tablets to keep for kids to.
You know what really makes me laugh?
Hold up, and then you also had companies that were having employees work from home, and so they ended up needing home computers. So you have two markets right off the bat that grow exponentially in demand as supply is dwindling, and. The fact of the matter is, like, you've had just, like, and this has been a problem that has been building for decades.
But here's the other thing. Sony actually said that they didn't think there would be much demand for consoles during a pandemic. And I'm thinking, what? Huh?
It doesn't seem to know how to read the room at all.
It's like, what? Dude, people are at home. What do you think they're going to do? Here's the thing. I said before, you know what? They should have just launched it in 2022.
Yeah, maybe.
Well, here's the thing. Microsoft saw the writing on the wall, and they looked at Halo and said, fuck it. We're just going to delay it until everybody has one next year.
Right. But where we end up now is that, like, Nintendo, NVIDIA, AMD, Intel, a lot of different tech companies have said that they're going to come up against shortages that may not, like, let up until even as far out as 2023.
Hmm.
Nintendo has already mentioned that it has the supplies to make Switches for the time being, but it mentioned it could come up against shortages later this year, which, if Nintendo announces a new Nintendo Switch, you better believe that that thing is going to be hard to get your hands on.
I think Nintendo is going to hold off with that because they just released the Lite.
I think they announce it at this year.
I know, they announce it, but they're going to hold off on actually releasing it. They'll just say, coming in 2023.
Yeah.
Hey, look, you know, it's a good way to build up the hype.
It is.
True.
But yeah, this chip famine is going to be going on for quite a while.
Yeah.
And on the story about, you know, developing more original game IPs, I think that's good. Do you think they'll, like, develop Kid Icarus or other
games? That's not a new IP. They're a completely new IP. By the way, that, you know, the thing is that there's a new Alex Kidd game coming out 36 years since the last one.
Two Alex Kidd games coming out from two different developers.
The first one is just a remake of the very first one.
Yes, Alex Kidd and Wonderworld.
Yeah. And it's like, people have been demanding Sega release an Alex Kidd game for decades, and they're finally doing it.
It's not Sega, though. It's a different company, I think. Let's see.
Yeah, well, that's the problem, though, isn't it? For Sega, that is. And oh boy, speaking of which, you know, those Microsoft-Sega acquisition rumors just will not die.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, wait a minute. Go ahead.
The sillier one this last week was that there was rumors going around that Square Enix was up on a table for...
that's not going to happen anytime soon. No.
Which turned out to be entirely false, because Square Enix has no reason to sell to anyone at this point.
By the way...
got people riled for a bit, because, like, can you imagine if Square Enix was consigned to one platform?
Here's the other thing. The reason why the Microsoft Nintendo things heated up as well because the Xbox posted that picture, that fan art, just made people go crazy. And that's why I think it's going to be just Master Chief on Smash. Don't worry about it. For those who don't know, some fan posted a DeviantArt of Mario's Master Chief and Bowser as a Covenant and Princess Peach as Cortana and all that stuff. And it's like, people just went apeshit when Xbox retweeted it. It's like, Xbox just like to fuck with people now. Jim Spencer is a big old troll, isn't he? Like I said, I just think it's going to be Mario and Smash Brothers, and that's all there is to it. It'll still be huge. It's not going to be huge like Microsoft and Nintendo, or Microsoft buys Nintendo, or Microsoft puts Xbox Game Pass on Nintendo, which is still a thing that might happen, by the way. Because Sony has been not so subtle about indicating they're abandoning Japan, basically. And Nintendo is still basically focusing on Japan. And whatever they make in Japan, they're just bringing here. And Microsoft desperately wants a part of that Japan market. And Nintendo may be a way for them to do it. And it has nothing to do with buying Nintendo. Just some sort of... Because here's the thing, you know, Microsoft's been releasing shit on Nintendo for a while now. Ori and Cuphead and all that stuff. So it's not like, you know, Nintendo and Microsoft don't already have a relationship.
Yeah. It's interesting to see the way that things are going, because PlayStation also made a huge investment in Epic Games recently. And it's
$200 million.
Yeah, $200 million. And it's the second time they've done that in the last 2 years. Like, Sony is getting very, very, very buddy-buddy with Epic Games ahead of the launch of Unreal Engine 5.
Yeah.
It's like... You got some major players that are kind of trying to... I don't think...
Here's the problem, though. Epic doesn't make games anymore. They make one game, and that's it now.
Yeah, but the more important thing is that they make an engine that... They make an engine that some of the best games out there use.
Yeah, I think the money that Sony is giving them is licensing for the Unreal Engine 5, more or less. Here's the thing.
Partially.
Games that are made with Unreal Engine 5 are still going to be multi-platform. There's no way Sony can say, we own exclusivity to Unreal Engine 5, and it's not going to happen.
Here's the thing, though. When you see a game that is an Epic Game Store game, and an Epic Game Store exclusive, it's becoming a more and more common occurrence that it's also a PS4, PS5 exclusive.
By the way, that just reminds me of something. What do you think of this Days Gone mess?
I think that guy was an idiot for saying that you that if you love a game, then you have to buy it at full price. It's like, I don't know if I love it until I've played it.
Hey, guess what? Game Pass allows you to play it without having to...
I don't know if I love it until I've played it, first off. And second off, not every person in the world has $60 to $70 to spend on every new game that comes out.
The other thing is, I'm not thinking about that statement, which was today, I think it was, right? He said it today, or maybe like yesterday. I know it was really recent.
I said it over this last weekend, and it made everybody like, what's wrong with you?
Yeah. No, the thing is that Days Gone made money, but it only got a 71 Metacritic. Mm-hmm. It's being put on PC, and Sony has said outright they're not going to make a sequel, which has pissed off a lot of games fans.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just wondering what you think of that.
It's a bummer. I don't think that Sony isn't investing in... Like, there's a fear that that Sony isn't investing in...
They want to make all tentpole games right now.
Yeah.
No, that's exactly what Jim Ryan says. We're going to make these big $200 million games. We're not doing AA games. We're not doing indie-style games. We only want the big $200 million, big-budget tentpole games. And I wonder if Jim Ryan has ever seen a movie studio that survived on that, because I'm going to tell him right now, they do not survive that way. That's a good way to get your movie studio finished.
Jim Ryan aside, It's not like it's not like PlayStation isn't investing in chances, though. Like, Returnal, for one. Returnal is upcoming. There's nothing... That hasn't been a game before. It's not a huge thing, and it's kind of just like this thing that's going to be on PS5, and it's a PS5 exclusive.
But is it a third-party game?
It's a first-party. It's...
Mm-hmm.
It's a PS exclusive, I do believe.
Yeah, I'm not telling you about if it's an exclusive or not, but is it a third-party game?
Let me check here. Housemarque. But published by Sony Interactive.
Yeah, that means nothing. That's not they're not developing it. Sony only wants to develop... And by the way, that might be the last one you see for a while. I'm just saying, Jim Ryan said, we're just doing big games right now.
But there was also Destruction All-Stars, which was like free for the first 2 months that it was out.
I'm just telling you what Jim Ryan says.
I know what Jim Ryan says. All I'm saying is that there's evidence to the contrary of what he says, like where there is room for...
Yeah, but here's the thing. Microsoft right now a game came out that, on Game Pass, you know, which is called Rain on Your Parade, which is a very simple game. I played it. It's like for kids, right? Is you're playing a rain cloud, and all you're doing, the entire game is just dropping rain on stuff. Mm. And you can kit out your cloud and all that stuff. But Microsoft wants that game because if they put it on Game Pass, they want to have a variety for Game Pass.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, oh, you have this, you have Rain on My Parade, and you have Gears 5. You know. You have Spiritfarer on Game Pass.
Yeah, I don't know. I just see, like... As far as Sony's self-developed projects, like, I don't see any harm in them chasing after, like, chasing after large games. But as long as they do things like Destruction All-Stars from time to time.
I think they're relying on third-party mostly for the other types of games.
Yeah, sure. But, like, they're not completely crossing out the possibility of new original IPs and taking chances. I mean, look at last year alone. They put out Ghost of Tsushima, made $1 billion, and now it's going to get a movie and a Netflix series and a sequel.
And it'll be on PC. That's every single PlayStation fan I've spoken to is pretty sure that it'll be on PC next.
Yeah. I just think that people are overblowing how much PlayStation... Like, yes... PlayStation said no to, like, Days Gone 2. But also, like...
They just want... Here's the thing. They want games that have a 90 Metacritic. And that's sure. That's not a way to run your business.
Sure. They make a lot of bad decisions. I just also don't think that they... I don't think that that's indicative of the idea that they're just, like, cutting down the possibility of new things.
We'll see. But there was also almost forgot. Damn! I just saw the item, and now I forgot it. Oh, by the way, Hitman 3 sold 300% better than Hitman 2.
Yes. Good for them. Like, that's incredible. That game has been a breakout hit for that game has been like super massive for IO Interactive.
Yeah.
And it's gonna allow them to continue to make content for Hitman 3 and also pour a bunch of investment into that James Bond game they're working on.
And I know how far have you gotten around in that game?
I am almost done with Hitman 1.
Okay.
Look, I've been taking my time with it. Scouring the levels and killing everybody in all the ways that I can. Yeah.
Well, I mean, there's a lot of people who might envy you in that you had the fortitude or at least the luck to be able to play all three of the games back to back to back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like I'll be able to see like where the dull moments are, where the big moments are, and where like what I like the most out of all three games. And especially, like, what's better or what's worse between the actual three major core entries.
Yeah. And they're
I'm excited to like continue moving towards Hitman. Hitman.
Well, nope, because IO Interactive's next game is going to be a James Bond game. And here's the thing: is that when you think about it, Hitman games are very much James Bond, if a little darker and edgier, with a protagonist with no morals whatsoever. Because Agent 47 do that James Bond doesn't do, except James Bond is a little more in your face with a machine gun. So, I mean, there's still DLC coming for Hitman 3 too. So, fortunately, while you're whiling away on Hitman 1 and 2, the new DLC will be there when you finally get to Hitman 3.
Yeah, I hope they're still doing. They just released the first Elusive Target for Hitman 3 this last weekend. And I hope they're still doing that by the time I get to Hitman 3.
I see. That's the price of not playing it now.
Mm-hmm. But they're also doing a ton of DLC, and this new one is based on the Seven Deadly Sins, which is going to be fun to see how all that plays out. So I'm excited to get there when I get there.
By the way, the first Hitman actually bombed. So credit Square Enix for sticking with it for 2 and 3.
Square Enix did not stick with it. They released Hitman 1 and 2 and then dropped IO Interactive before 3 because it didn't do enough in sales. And so IO Interactive self-published Hitman 3, and that's the one where they made bank.
Sucks to be Square Enix then.
Right.
Anyways, look for our show notes at gamingpodcast.net, along with industry news and our gaming history articles. We enjoy feedback, so just comment at our blog at gamingpodcast.net. Also, set us up at facebook.com/gamingpodcast. Subscribe to us on iTunes. Leave us iTunes comments. You can find me at Twitter at Jonah Falcon.
You can find me at Johnny Chugs.
And you can find me at Chard Ramore.
And we will see you next week. And we had to do this 2-hour podcast just to catch up with everything we missed last week.
Yep, so hope you enjoy. Happy gaming, everyone.
Have fun, be cool, play games, y'all.
Yep, and that is... Oh no, it didn't record.